Good morning, honorable members. The Department of Mineral Resources, represented by the DG, the staff of the committee, our friendly guests who are always with us. You know, I must say that I thought I'll never see your faces again, and where possible until June or so 2018, if I happen to be lucky or some of you happen to be lucky with me. And, until such times, I was reminded that no, life continues. So welcome, honorable members. After a long time, 2 months to be exact, full as in F-U. You need these days. You must explain what you. You must explain these days what you say. Otherwise, you may end up answering. Obviously, there have been a lot of activities since then. I've got no intentions of detaining anyone. But you will recall that there were some outstanding matters, some of them which were not at our request. They were on the basis of what we were told we were supposed to do. So we have to find a way of rounding up some of those issues. I must say also, I think down the line we will make a request as you see the agenda on some of the matters again that have been thrown or referred to the committee as a form of a correspondence. But having said so, I know that as we speak, and hopefully something will be done, we still have a crisis, DG, in Middelburg, of those trapped. I'm not sure whether to say mine workers or illegal miners, or but the fact of the matter, these are human beings. It's human life. And hopefully, as we continue, we will be able to, sadly as it is, be able to get some form of relief news, which still reflect on a matter that we are still seized with, on how to deal with the challenge of illegal mining. But having said so, are there any apologies?
Good morning, members and the guests. I've got apologies from Mr. Lorima and Mr. Jackson.
Thank you. Bye.
They are attending other meetings, sir.
Okay. Honorable members. Okay, honorable members, we are supposed to be receiving the report on the department. You will remember we dealt with the issue of the high level panel recommendations on quite a number of issues which we then requested the department to be able to come and make the presentation based on those findings or recommendations of the high-level panel. The second issue is the matter that one will request that we put it here with regards to the program of the committee, that based on what has been given to us, we needed to do. But I must say in advance, the technicality was that surely in between we must be able to take issues that we will be able to do justice. Because for now, according to the program, we are finishing on the 20th of March. So whatever we do, it will require that we must be able to consolidate the work that we are moving towards, the consolidation of the work that we are doing. But the last issue which you won't find in your agenda, which we want to request, it's a letter that we received from the Speaker's office. We could have tackled the matter. Unfortunately, the manner it is written, it's written to the committee from the Speaker's office, and therefore it is not for us not to table it in the committee. So we request just one item. We must have correspondence with specifically, or we can specifically put it as a letter from the Speaker, and then we will read the letter to the committee, and then the committee will decide how to deal with the matter going forward. If members, in the absence of an objection, I hope we all agree. Babu DG, I must say, with hindsight, before you make your presentation, if the committee will finally agree, there is a similar, not the same, there is almost a similar report of the high-level panel that we expect from the Human Rights Commission. So I'm just making you aware that don't be surprised if when they make that presentation and there might be new issues, we might again come back to the department and say, you have to respond or account for some of those issues. I'm just saying that the reason I'm saying by hindsight, there could be an argument that says probably you should have started with the two reports for the sake of fairness on your part and then invite the department. But being the case as it may, this is where we are at this stage. Because of the time availabilities also, it became a separate matter to handle. Having said so, I can see we have a huge delegation and some new faces that when you are on the exit, I told one person, I said, hey, you are coming, you are lucky, you are coming at the time where we are on the exit. Probably, I'm sure some in the department, they say TFG, thanks for going. But that's part of our work that we do. So you will introduce your delegation, especially your new team. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me also take...
Sorry, I forgot to do something officially. We were joking. Congratulations to the whip of the ANC, Inkosi Mandela, for being a father double. We forgot that when you left in December, you were still in anticipation. Now you are lucky. I'm sure your ancestors and your God, they are smiling. I won't say what Honorable Beginning was saying. Okay. a boy and a girl.
Two names.
DJ, continue.
Thank you very much. Chair, let me also greet the honorable members and to say compliments for the belated compliments of the new year. It's for the first time that we are having our PPC meeting, and it's for the first time that we are meeting. Chair, in terms of apologies from our side, I only have one apology from the Honorable Minister, Peter Mantash, who is currently in a meeting, cabinet meeting. I have a full team. You can see, Chair, that there is enough capacity, Honorable Members, in the department, and also the issue of gender, we are prioritizing it, Honorable Members. Next to me here, I have the director responsible for policy, Ms. Madia. Next to her, we have Mr. Mchali, who is also responsible for policy formulation and development. We also have Mr. Tucha. Mr. Tucha is the most important man in the department. He's the one that registers all these minds that you are having in the department. And next to him, we have Mr. Mkuna, who is from the Chief Inspectorate. And next to Mr. Mkuna, we have the usual culprit, Mr. Matros. And also, we have the PA to the DG in attendance. Now, Chair, you spoke about the new people that are coming on board when we are just about to go into the sixth parliament. We have a new PLO that we have appointed, Mr. Michael Carmichael Ngalo, and so he's the one that will be liaising and interacting with boss and also honorable members, and so he's quite, I mean, hands-on. We know some of the issues that we had to deal with previously, and so we have Mr. Ngalo that will be helping us. As for the presentation, Chair, we have responded to all the issues that have been raised by the panel, but then Ms. Madia will then do the presentation. Before the presentation, the full presentation, I just want to highlight a few key issues that I think they should be of a consideration to the honorable members. Chair, our view in the department is that we have a duty and responsibility to protect mining, because we have many competing interests. You have many NGOs that are also getting into our space. And now it is incumbent upon the department also to come forward to make sure that mining continues to survive. I'm raising this point precisely because, Chair, we have looked at the recommendations of the high panel. We're not against the recommendations. There are specific issues that we have identified, in particular around the question of consent versus meaningful consultation. Now, you remember during the MPRD amendment bill, this issue came up quite strongly. And our position as the department was very clear that if then that is the route that we were to follow, we might as well forget completely about mining in this country. Now, there are quite a number of factors that we can look into. We're not undermining the issues that have been raised by our communities. I think in the department, that's what we are prioritizing. That is a conversation that we are having with mining companies. And now they are also coming on board. Even last week, Friday, we are engaging on the very same subject matter. That the issue of consent, Chair, we know that there is a recent judgment where there is an interpretation of what is contained within EPINRA and what is contained within the MPRD. And so we are saying that for now, we have appealed this judgment precisely on the question of consent. But we're not saying that the communities must not be consulted. That meaningful consultation, it is still a critical component that must always be considered. Now we know, Chair, that in terms of MPRDA, the state is the custodian of this mineral rights on behalf of the people and for the benefit of all the people in the country. And so these are the issues that we are grappling with. Now we'll hear from the court, I mean, you know, based on the appeal that we have also lodged as a department. And so, Chair, we know that mining continues to be very critical in making a very meaningful contribution to our economy. We remember that around the 70s, mining, you know, used to contribute around 23% to our GDP. Today, we are sitting at 7%. Now, the conversation that we're having at the moment in the department through our minister, it is how can we increase the contribution of mining maybe to 10% and above. And so with the developments that are taking place within the sector at the moment, we believe that it may undermine all these good efforts. We know the challenges that we are faced with, and so I'm not going to allude to those challenges. But it is important for us to take note that we are equally committed in making sure that our communities are not undermined as and when mining operations have to take place. And so the director here will deal with all the responses that we have prepared. We have tried to make sure that we do justice to all these issues. But then if you look at MPRDA, we have a way of dealing with all the issues that have been raised by the panel. At the end of the day, Chair, why I'm overemphasizing this point is because you are lawmakers, and now whatever that you are going to recommend may have some implications as well. That is why I'm overemphasizing this point. Then at the end, I would actually give our concluding remarks. And there is also one matter that I will deal with at the end of the presentation as well, the D account matter. I will just conclude with it. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. As introduced by DG, I'm Sibongile Madie from the department. I will take you through the department's response. Before I do that, I would like to first indicate that when the MPRDA was promulgated in 2002, it recognized the state's internationally accepted rights over state sovereignty over its minerals and petroleum resources. And the Act further recognized that the mineral resources and petroleum resources are non-renewable and they are a common heritage to all South Africans, and the state must ensure that they are developed, sustainably developed for the benefit of all the people of South Africa. And one might argue that the principle of community consent then takes away the state's custodianship over the country's mineral resources. I will then go directly to the responses. DG has already covered the background. The first recommendation that the report dealt with was that the MPRDA must be amended to comply with the PILRA to ensure any argument affecting communal land must include steps taken to obtain consent from those affected, including needs of those consulted and proof of their consent. Our response on this recommendation is that the MPRDA currently as it is, it provides or requires that there must be meaningful consultation with interested and affected stakeholders, landowners and lawful occupiers. And we are aware that consultation has been raised as a challenge by communities and landowners. We will be amending regulations to tighten community consultation. The concept of community consent, as DG has indicated, it is a subject of the court, and the department will be addressing it going forward. But also, as indicated, we are of the view that the principle of consent takes away the responsibility of the state to act as a custodian. The second recommendation was that any action taken in terms of the MPRDA should be compliant with the PILRA, failing which it should be declared invalid. The provisions of the Act require that before a right is granted, the right holder must have complied with all applicable laws. This includes appeal. However, we are not sure that it requires consent. But as indicated, it's subject to court and will be dealt with by the court. The next recommendation is that laws such as the NPRBA that have been interpreted to enable land grabs should be explicitly made subject to each other and amended in other ways as well. The department's response on this one is that the NPRBA does not regulate land grabs. The NPRBA is concerned with minerals, which is what is beneath the land. Our view is that the NPRBA does not have to be amended to address land issues. Land issues are dealt with under different regulatory frameworks. The next one is where mining has taken place on communal land and the directly affected community has not benefited. The NPRBA must provide for compensation for individuals, households, and communities to be calculated to put affected persons in the position that they would have been had the mining not occurred. The department's view in this one is that we have Section 54 in the NPRBA, which sufficiently makes provision for compensation to landowners and lawful occupiers for loss as a result of mining taking place in their land. Section 54 provides for a process and it includes mediation, arbitration. So we believe that there are sufficient mechanisms within Section 54 to assist those that are affected by mining to receive the relevant compensation. The issue of retrospective compensation by communities might have to be negotiated with right holders. The next recommendation was that the NPRBA must be amended to ensure that both revenues from mining-related activities and opportunities generated by such mining activity are shared in an equitable and transparent manner among people whose land rights are directly affected. On this one, honorable members, the NPRBA was amended to remove any administration relating to royalties. Royalties are now administered by the Department of by National Treasury under the Royalties Act, so the department does not regulate matters relating to revenue. Again, honorable members, those revenues, the views of the department is that they must be shared with all the people of South Africa, as indicated that the minerals belong to all who live in it. We have sufficient regulatory influence that deals with ensuring that those who are directly affected, communities, landowners, and local occupiers, benefit from mining. Those documents include the mining charter, the social and labor plan. These are the documents that we believe these ones are for those that are directly affected by mining. But as for revenue generated, that is a matter of national treasury. The next recommendation said that the NPRBA must include clear and binding financial and administrative protocols for entities that purport to represent community interests and companies that do business with them, including accountability mechanisms that align with customary law principles of transparency and accountability. Through the mining charter, the 2018 mining charter, the charter introduces a provision for community interests to be represented through trust or a relevant instrument that the community might choose. However, these entities are regulated elsewhere. They are regulated by relevant acts. The trusts are regulated under relevant acts, and this act prescribes for how they must account, and communities will be consulted on a relevant mechanism that they want their interests to be housed under. So we believe that this matter has been addressed through the manager. On the next page, Honorable Members, the next recommendation was that the MPRBA must be amended to provide for a charter to protect and promote customary and artisanal small-scale miners and set a framework for participation of communities in the sustainable and equitable exploitation of the resources on their communal lands. Honorable Members, we have Section 104 in the MPRBA, which deals with the community's preference rights to apply for a mining right or a prospecting right. Should a community identify a mineral in their land and they would like to apply for it, there is Section 104 in the Act which provides for or gives the community the preference right to apply for such a right. And if you read Section 104 with Section 12 empowers the minister to assist historically disadvantaged South Africans to apply for rights. In as far as small-scale mining is concerned, we have Section 27 in the MPRDA which deals with small-scale mining, and under the Mining Charter, the 2018 Mining Charter, we have made provision for relaxed requirements for small-scale, for emerging miners to ensure that we have relaxed regulatory requirements for them. This takes into consideration the size of the project and ensuring that they also remain competitive and they grow. The next recommendation is on Section 47. The recommendation was that Section 47 must be amended expressly to provide for the suspension or cancellation of mining rights where a company has significantly failed to meet its social and labor plan and the BEE requirements. There is a recommendation that this power has never been used. The department's response is that Section 47 already makes provision for suspension and cancellation of rights due to non-compliance or misrepresentation of facts. So should a company fail to comply with a BEE or social labor plan, these are terms and conditions of the rights. When a right is executed, this forms part of the terms and conditions. Should the company fail to do that, Section 47 already provides for a process that must be followed for the minister to suspend or cancel the right. The issue of it not being used is an implementation issue, but the law already makes sufficient provision for such. The next recommendation relates to mechanisms to independently investigate and advise on community grievances in an efficient, democratic, and transparent manner. Again, Honorable Chairs, on this one, we would like to indicate that we have Section 54 with a process that includes mechanisms for arbitration and mediation where there are disagreements. Section 54 also includes a provision where the regional manager can assist parties to come to an agreement, and should there be a need, we can further elaborate on the process in the regulation and provide clarity on the Section 54 process. The next section is on Section 10. The recommendation here is that the MPRDA must be amended to expressly require that directly affected communities must be invited to negotiate and seek agreement on any mining application. Again, this one, Honorable Members, touches to consent by communities, and as we have indicated, the principle of consent will take away the state's responsibility to act as a custodian on behalf of all the people of South Africa. The next recommendation is that the MPRDA must be amended to expressly require compliance with the PILRA as a condition for the granting of a related mining right. On this one, Honorable Members, our view is that the MPRDA already makes provision for a right holder to comply with all, to take into account all applicable laws, and the PILRA is included. The only concern here we have is the issue of consent, which is the subject of court. The next recommendation on page 9 says that the MPRDA must be amended to specify the minimum information to be shared with communities, including full mining right applications, environmental assessments, prior to any decision to accept mining under EPIRA. Honorable members, on this one, we, as indicated before, we will be reviewing the regulation to make provision to extend or clarify consultation process, and that provision on the regulations will make provision for the sort of documents, give an example of the sort of documents that must be made available to affected communities and landowners and local occupiers for them to be able to make a decision. The next requirement, recommendation, is that a mining rights applicant must, at its own expense, invite the community to appoint an independent expert or experts of their own choosing to assist in the EPIRA negotiation in the communal areas. The department's view on this one is that this issue can be negotiated or discussed with the right holder when the right holder is consulting with the landowners and local occupiers. The concern here is the consent issue, but in as far as the appointment of an independent expert, we believe that it can be negotiated during the consultation process. The next recommendation is that where more than one community is affected, each shall have the right to independently decide whether to grant or refuse its consent. On this one, honorable members, we've already indicated that the consent requirement is a consent to the department because it touches on the very important principle of minerals belonging to all the people of South Africa. However, mining consultation is supported by the department, and we will be amending the regulations to strengthen the consultation process. On page 10, the next recommendation was that where mining requires the relocation of specific community members. So, honorable members, on page 10, all the three recommendations, they touch to the relocation of the community members. And the first one says where there is relocation, there must be a requirement that majority of those to be relocated must consent to the mining activity. The next one is that no person or community may be relocated to another mining unless such relocation is unavoidable. And then the last one is that alternative land must be a default compensation and people must be offered living conditions equal to or better than their conditions prior to the relocation. On these three recommendations, honorable members, we are in the process of developing a relocation or resettlement guideline. This guideline will be consulted with the Department of Rural Development and all other affected stakeholders. We will also consult with communities and community representatives on the guideline. So the guideline will make sure that the rights and interests of communities are protected, and the modalities of the relocation, such as the land on alternative land and the benefits that must accrue to communities, will be specified in the guidelines. On page 11, there is a recommendation relating to cash compensation that must be based not on market value but on real value to affected people, taking into account the effective value of resources such as plowing and grazing, land, water, and access to cultural value. This also, honorable members, will be addressed in the relocation guideline that we are busy with. The next one relates to section 5A relating to the prohibition relating to illegal acts. The recommendation is that Section 5A must make it illegal to mine without community consent under the customary law and in compliance with the EPIRA. Again, our concern is the consent principle on this matter. We support meaningful consultation with landowners, local occupiers, and interested and affected stakeholders. We are just concerned with the consent principle. The next one is, should mining commence or a right be granted without the consent, again, the committee shall have the right to set aside. On this one, honourable members, as indicated previously, the state is the custodian and the minister acting on behalf of the state has been given the right by parliament to grant rights, so is the right to set aside or suspend or cancel applications. But also to indicate, honourable members, that the minister has a responsibility to make sure that community interests and rights are protected. On page 12, the recommendation says that communities must have a right to revoke their consent should mining activities be conducted in a manner which is contrary to the NPRBA and its regulations, with communities then entitled to compensation for the full damages suffered by all mining activities. On this one, honourable members, as indicated, the right to suspend or cancel has been given to minister by parliament, and the minister has the responsibility to protect the rights of those that are affected, communities and lands, local owners and occupiers. And there is also section 54 in the NPRBA which addresses the issue of compensation. On page 13, on the concluding honourable members, this one is just to indicate that the state is the custodian of the mineral and petroleum resources for all the benefit of the people, and the consent principle takes away the state's responsibility. And the act also, it is also important to indicate that the MPRBA separated the mineral ownership from land ownership, and that we are in the process of proposing the resettlement guideline, and we believe that the SLP, the Social Labour Plan, the Mining Charter, together with the resettlement guideline will assist in addressing community issues relating to mining taking their land and benefits. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, Chair, it is evident that the MPRBA is sufficient in addressing some of the concerns that have been raised by the panel. Now, as Ms. Lydia has indicated, that maybe the issue of implementation in other areas, and also to ensure that we do enforce. What we have been discussing with the department, the issue of monitoring and evaluation, not monitoring and evaluation of ticking boxes, but of assessing the impact that some of these projects are making, you know, in changing the lives of our people, impacting positively to the lives of our people. And so that is one other area that we are currently looking at in the department, in making sure that the MPRBA, in terms of its relevancy and also its responsiveness in dealing with the matters that our communities continue to raise, we become responsive in engaging and dealing with those matters. And so it is one very critical issue that we are dealing with. But just to overemphasize one point that emanates from the presentation. Well, remember the executive authority of the department during his first appearance before this very important committee. He alluded to the fact that we are currently looking around the issue of artisanal mining. I'm raising it within the context of some of the issues that have been debated and discussed around the small-scale mining and artisanal mining. And so it's a matter that we are exploring in the department, especially on the artisanal mining, because as for small-scale mining, we do have mechanisms in the department to deal with such. Now, Chair and Honourable Members, the discussions that are also taking place currently is the attractiveness of our country to investors, because remember that we are currently engaging in a conversation that it is primarily intended to ensuring that we get investors into our country. Now, we need to work together on this one, because some of the things that have been raised, they are presenting themselves as a challenge to investors. We're not saying that we must actually overlook all these other matters, especially community-related matters. We are equally committed in ensuring that the communities are taken on board, and that is why the minister is very much passionate about this issue, that he had what he characterizes as a full engagement or onboarding with our communities. Remember that starting from the 6th of April, when we started at Emalahleni, visiting all the active mining areas in the whole country, up until the last town that we visited on the 31st of May, Newcastle. And so we have been engaging on these matters. And now, key to this, what came out of those engagements? It was a question of a trust deficit that persists between ourselves as a department and our communities, and our communities and mining companies. Now, the challenge to that is that we have not been able to have a meaningful discussions or dialogue with our communities. And so we have since now moved closer to each other, together with the mining companies and ourselves as a department, with our communities. Now we have started to engage more regularly and constantly. That is why even during the mining charter summit that we had last year, from the 7th to the 8th of July, we have ensured that the mining executives, they also attend to be under the one roof with our ordinary muscles. Now we transported these communities that are affected by mining to come to the summit to raise their issues, because we made that commitment during our consultation. And so that on its own is a sign of commitment from the side of the department that MPRDA, it is useful. We need to make it to be more useful by implementing it. And so that will be our submission to the honorable members. And now, Chair, moving to the last point of the D account, as it is correctly covered here, of the monies that have been lost that, or that cannot be accounted for. Chair, we know that this matter has been investigated by the public protector, and a report was made to Treasury. And now, as a department, we don't have any jurisdiction at the moment over this matter. Now, perhaps what can happen is that you can raise it with your with the Finance Committee. And so I think we can take it further from there. But then as for the department, we strongly believe that it is not within our jurisdiction at the moment. And so the Finance Committee can be engaged, because the matter is now with National Treasury. I think, Chair, in the nutshell, that is how we have summarized our submission to the honorable members. Thank you very much.
Okay. You know, yes, this is.
Just to clarify this point, Chair, before it can come from honorable members, you know, we always use this abbreviation, IPINSA. It is an interim protection of informal rights act. Thank you.
I miss Honorable Lorema and Honorable Chapter, because surely if they were present, those two chairs wouldn't be there. The distance between Honorable Matlala and Honorable Schmidt it's so huge. I know Honorable Lorema would have loved to sit next to Honorable Matlala. I can see how Honorable Schmidt is so allergic to sit next. Okay. Honorable members, there is a take. Just some bit of sad news, which I still have to verify, DG. I forgot to say this. Oh, sorry, I forgot to say this. There's been a strike in the gold industry. specifically between AMCU and Sibani. The sad news that I've just received, unverified, which you have to verify, was that four people were shot on the bus stop, and probably one of them passed away. Mm-hmm. One of the miners or mine workers were going to work. I'm not sure, so we're still, the reason I'm raising it is because I think I should have raised that, how many months now? Probably it's almost the fourth month. I have not been active because it's a very serious matter. Probably it will require the guidance of the committee. Unfortunately, we've adopted the agenda that if the committee is of the view that we bring it back here next time, not the shootings and all those things, but the fact that it's too long. And it seems to be taking, I raised this thing, Honorable Matlala, Honorable Mafolo. I said when we're dealing with the Optimum, Shiva and so forth, my fear is to go back the Blaze Fall, ne? Or Aurora scenario. And it seemed DG was sliding exactly in that direction. I dare say we have seen the events of 2012 and its consequences. And we have seen the events of, when was it? 2014, the 5 months. I think it's 2014, if I'm not, the 5 months. We've seen that experience. I think it's 2012 to 2013, yes. So, I know now no one wants to enter that terrain because of what previously happened when such things occurred. But let's leave that for a later time. Honorable members, there is a presentation, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Yago. Are you crying, Honorable Mafon, or is the aircon? Yeah. If someone can help, I will take off my jacket when I feel hot. Eh? The last time I checked, the technology was too complex, even for Kaya. Oh. Okay. Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reference to the state sovereignty in terms of state custodianship is a matter of interpretation, because the mutual state, there's consent or no consent, or consultation or no consultation. That in itself doesn't define state custodianship. State custodianship is here for the benefit of all people. Those directly affected by mining, those indirectly affected by mining, and people totally in a different side of the country. It's not affected at all. But it's for everyone. But the attractiveness argument, if I may get to the attractiveness argument, is it requires a fair and a considered and a, by virtue of a better word, definitive action by the department. Because if the mining communities are not dealt with fairly, considered, and in a definitive way, they will remain upset or unhappy or even go on to further action which may lead to whatever, protest action. And that creates an impact on the attractiveness which are experienced by the mining companies. So back to the square, it's like a round loop. If you don't start with the communities and making them happy, the mining communities, the mining companies are aware of it. And they're aware of these demands. And they're aware of the fact that their communities are unhappy. And they're aware of the fact that they are going to court. So it starts as part well, a very important cog of that whole attractiveness scenario is mining communities that are sufficiently dealt with and are sufficiently compensated for their loss. But that brings me to the other point, and part of the problem which I find with regards to mining communities is that the expectations created deliberately, I don't know how, are so huge that no mining company can adhere to those expectations. And we're back to what we've requested, that those SRPs be made available. Because if SRPs, and I'm not sure whether they are, they may have been in the meantime, but if they are available, those mining communities can know that is what this mining company promised, 1, 2, 3, 4. And this is what the local government will do, 1, 2, 3, 4. And this is what national government should do, 1, 2, 3, 4. Now the mining community is expecting the companies to do everything from roads to opening spaza shops to putting lights to schools to... It can't be. So they need transparency. They need transparency in terms of SOPs, whatever is required by the mine to the community, so the communities know. And the mining community can go to the DMR and say, I'm not happy with the undertakings by the mining company. But there needs to be a fair, considered approach in all of those parties interrelated, because it has an impact on the attractiveness experienced by the mining companies. That's on the one thing. And I would just like to know whether the SRPs are now being made available, because I think we were moving in that direction. I'm not sure that consent or consultation impedes the state custodianship at all. What does it matter if a mining community were to be given consent? Nothing. The mining company will say, listen, I am dealing with a mining community once, or a owner of a piece of land in the middle of Eastern Cape. He would have given him, let's say, R1 million. The consent may lead to him being given optimally more. So what? You have a community that is, and a land rights holder that is happy, satisfied, and a mining company that can say, I have now come to a situation where that particular individual has given me consent. So he can't be unhappy. That creates a sense of security by the mining company. It's like me trying to buy your house. If I'm going to come to you and say, I am going to take your house, A, it has an impact on whether you're happy or not. B, it creates an unequal partnership. Because I, as a community, may have a standard 5 qualification. Now I'm supposed to be negotiating with a company that has a string of lawyers, a string of financial experts, and a whole department behind them, and I'm supposed to be negotiating a fair deal to myself. It cannot be. It's an unequal partnership. It's an unequal relationship. And that community will forevermore be unhappy if it has to negotiate not only against the department, but also because the department only says consultation. And you know what consultation is practiced at the moment. It says, I'm going to speak to you, I'm going to inform you, and despite what you say, it's up to the department to determine whether the mining rights will be granted. And then worse, you say, compensation can be discussed. But you know what happens? The DMR issues the mining right. I'm not sure. It grants the mining right. I'm not sure whether it issues it. But it grants the mining right and then expects compensation to be discussed afterwards. Now, how does that work? This community is taken off the land, or this individual is taken off the land and said, don't worry, we are still going to discuss compensation. But it was my land. Before I moved, I want to know, I have been paid this amount, or I'm going to be paid this amount before I'm relocating. Because where do I relocate to? How do I plan on what I'm going to receive if you tell me in terms of Section 54 that my compensation will be determined after the mining right has been granted? You are saying you're looking at the community's interest, but we are doing exactly the opposite. I wouldn't like to be put off my land without consultation, number one, and number two, without being known what my compensation will be. So we need to get real. I can't put it better. We need to get real. If we say we are looking after the interest of the community, and then ensuring that there's attractiveness in the mining industry for companies to come and invest. Because it doesn't help to get them here and then say, there's all these issues. All they do is take the money back. I can't put it more better than that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Honorable Yako.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have two questions, but the second question I would like to be answered, and then I'll carry on with the follow-up. The first question is not really a question, it's a concern regarding the consent part. I'm asking in my mind, what's the point of seeking consultation from communities if you then want to negate the consent from the community? It's almost patronizing, because you're saying that we are doing the part where in black and white we are consulting with you, but then we're not taking seriously whether you consent or not, because we're going to do what we want to do. So my question is this: why is DMR appealing the Kolobeni High Court judgment? The second question, in the agenda it speaks about there will be information on billions of rands unaccounted for from the Bahasa Bahafela. I didn't see that in the presentation. So my question is it another presentation that's coming, or is there no presentation? So that, because I've got a question around that.
Okay. No. Let's do it like this. There was a response. I deliberately not wanted us to talk to it now. When we deal finish this report, we'll deal with the supplementary verbal response. The response was that the matter was a subject of investigation by the public protector. The public protector submitted the report, and the report is with the treasurer. Now, there was a, I don't want DG, without putting the words in your mouth, there was a view, a suggestion, that this committee can engage with the committee, standing committee on finance, to have access on the work that is being done. So that's why I parked it first, to first deal with the high-level panel and then deal with the report that has been submitted with regards to the matter that you are raising as a last matter. So can we first exhaust this, and then we will deal with the view or opinion on the matter of the DR, that's the DR account that is being suggested. Okay. Yes.
Will we be able to engage then also?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Rest assured. Okay. DG?
No, Felix Onozak. No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will deal with the outstanding or remaining questions, if there will still be any questions. I would like to give over to Ms. Madia. I must not take over from her because she has made a presentation. I must not take that opportunity.
Thank you, DG.
Thank you,
DG. You know,
there's
a
problem with men. When things are difficult, you hit a point that the answer must come from a woman. Continue.
You are right.
Go back on my phone. I'm not going to come back
for me. Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chief, to be honest, I agree with you. Compensation must be passed prior to final granting of the rights. I think this is an implementation. The DG is the big boss. He's here. He was dealing with it. But it is an implementation issue, and it must be discussed prior to the granting of the rights. It only makes sense that it must be discussed prior to the granting of the rights. But the SOHs, they are made available. Going forward, the mining charter, because it was not part of the MTRPA, but in the mining charter 2018, there is a provision that the SLPs must be made forward and they must be published in different languages, so that part will be implemented going forward. on the issue of consent touching on the state custodianship, you are, maybe you are right, Honorable Smith, maybe it is a matter of interpretation, but if the state is depending on consent before a right is issued, for me, then it means that the state does not really, is not really a custodian, because it's dependent on the community first saying yes or no. Unless we are talking consent to benefit, but not to granting of a right, because there's a difference there. If it is consent to the benefits that will accrue to the community or the landowner, then it's a different issue. But if it is a consent relating to the granting of the right, then the state does not really play a major role there, because the state will not be in a position to grant or refuse a right. It will have to depend first on what the community decides. So for me, it touches, that touches on the custodianship part of it. I think most of the other issues were comments relating to the DMR creating a lot of expectations, and the fact that SLPs must be clear relating to the roles and responsibilities, they must be clarified. We agree. When we were consulting on the charter, we made it clear, we consulted with SAUDA, we made it clear that local economic development is a responsibility of local municipalities. Mining companies are required to complement local economic development, because if now there is a challenge with local municipalities, communities end up thinking that everything must be done by mining companies. Those are the issues that the department will be addressing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to add, I think the director has done justice in responding to the questions, and in the main, I think honorable members were also commenting. Chair, during the mining endeavor that took place last week, we had a group of people protesting. You know, it happens every year. Apparently, for the past 10 years, they have been coming here. They call their structure an alternative mining endeavor. What do they usually do? They come to the mining endeavor to deliver their demands. Now they have compiled sort of a brochure of all the demands that they have submitted to their different, you know, governments, because that structure is constituted by a number of countries, both Southern Africa and West Africa in the main. And we have agreed, we are in conversation. I'm just trying to make this point to demonstrate to honorable members that how serious we are taking this matter. We have agreed that we're going to have a meeting with them. The minister made that commitment that he would want to meet with the committee. On Friday, again, just immediately after mining endeavor, we had another session with our communities, and I mean, Makua was also part of the same meeting. Now, I must say that we have started in ensuring that we come closer to each other with our communities. Now, one point, you know, I had an interview with one radio station, and so they wanted to take me to task on this point. When I said that, well, we do have mining companies that, you know, to be fair enough, they are not, you know, complying, but we do have mining companies that are complying. And now the journalist was very quick even to interrupt me that they give me those mines. Now, I don't want to appear as if I'm a spokesperson of certain mines. It is because of experience and also our interactions with communities in those areas. I'm not going to mention the name of the mine in this meeting. But this one, I think it is quite very important for one to mention. The CEO of Anglo American, I mean, I'm raising it because he was very much emotional about it and very passionate, Mark Kutifani, emphasizing the importance of consultation with our communities, to engage, to have a meaningful engagement with our communities. And so to have such kind of, of a commitment from the CEO, you know, the role that Anglo plays in our country, it's a sign of commitment that we're getting somewhere. And so it is a very significant point that we should take note of. I think it directly replies to the question that Honorable Member has raised of, we must be fair and, communities must be listened to, we must be considerate to their plight and make sure that we are factual and realistic in dealing with their issues. That's what we are doing now. Now, on the issue of SLPs, just to add on what Ms. Mangila has presented, that there are too much expectations and many companies are expected to do more, but what the minister has been saying is that there must be a clear, mechanisms between municipalities and the mining companies on how they're going to deal with the IDPs and the SLPs. Because certainly, if you embark on your process of consulting with communities for your IDP as a municipality, and the mining company consults as well with communities for the SLPs, in one way or the other, at the end of the day, those issues are going to have to be reconciled, or the two entities, they must come together to reconcile, to check what the municipality has received and what the mining company has actually received from the community. They must then agree that the municipality will do the following projects, then the mining company will do certain projects. And now, it's a way of saying that let us now remove, this uncertainty that has been prevailing, that we don't know between SLP and IDP which one comes first. Now, there must be, a meeting and discussion between our municipalities and the mining companies. And so I think, in the main, some of the issues that have been raised by Honorable Lorima, you were just commenting, and these are very constructive. Sorry, advocate. These are very constructive inputs. Now, I think, Honorable Yaku, on your point of consent and consultation, as I said, that during the MPRD amendment processes, we appeared before the select committee on this matter, and we debated this issue quite extensively of a consent. It was also contained in the document. To be frank with you, honorable members, here we must just actually then take a decision that we must forget about mining if we think that mining would happen any time too soon if the issue of consent had to be entertained, because it is going to be abused, let me put it frankly like that. It is going to be abused by other opportunistic elements within our communities. Currently, we are having a problem of the forums. Now, they were even saying that we must write letters to give them recognition, and so we're not in the business of recognizing structures. But in our business, we know that there are structures that are recognized in terms of other laws, like our traditional councils and so forth, they are recognized. We do interact, but we interact with everybody, we interact with all the structures, but we can't as a department write a formal letter and say that we recognize this forum, because once you do that, you are inviting problems, because there are no statutory requirements, and so other people are going to establish their own forums, then it will mean that you must recognize them. And so a similar situation is happening in the Free State, whereby the people that were in the big forum, which is constituted by different towns, in fact the whole district, now there are those that then realized that they were not getting any attention. They moved out of this bigger one, they have established their own forum, because they were part of the discussions when this forum was given attention during their meetings. Now they want the department to write a formal letter to recognize them as well as a forum. And so these are some of the things that are going to create a problem, especially when it comes to the question of consent. Of course, with consultation, as Longile has covered this point, that there must be a way in which mining companies, they agree with the landowners in advance before the mining can happen in terms of how they're going to deal with the issue of compensation for their land and so forth. And so that is a kind of arrangement that we think it will be more appropriate in addressing all these challenges. But consent, it is going to create serious problems for us. The appeal for the decision following a court judgment, I think the minister is on record. I mean, I'm sure all of us, we have read, we have familiarized ourselves with the judgment. If you read the whole body of the judgment, it is absolutely perfect in terms of the issues that have been raised by the court. But then the only issue that we are appealing, our prayer is only on one issue, that is consent. So that's what we are appealing. We're not against the entire body of, what we normally characterize or define as obiter dictum. You know, you find the judge making a certain statement. Now, lay people may think that that is a judgment. It's not a judgment, but it's just a statement that is being made by judge. But then in the main, we are going to cooperate in making sure that what is contained within the judgment, except one area of consent that we have appealed. And so we'll hear from the court at the end of the day what is the view of the court on this matter. And so I think, Chair, that is our position in as far as the particular matter is concerned. Thank you very much.
Okay. Let me come back to you, Honorable Schmidt. Let me problematize your problem. Maybe that's the problem all of that's the problem all of us we have here. First, this is a report of the high level panel. It's making observations and recommendations. My fear is that it seems all of us, we might find ourselves caught up in a power protection cubicle. Have we identified what is the problem? Do we have a problem or a challenge of consent, or do we have a problem? Because I don't think everything is about consent. That's my fear. Or do we have a challenge of compliance with other statutory requirements beyond those that regulate as determined by the MPRD? Let me make a simple example. Do we treat compliance or adherence to IPILRA as equal to consent? Because if we don't separate these two, we'll end up discussing consent when the issue is about compliance with other statutory requirements which are outside the regulations of the DMR. So I want us to draw this thing, but also ask a question. Is consent equivalent to agreement? Is community consent the same as community agreement? Because I see, if that issue is not clarified, my interpretation would be that community consent talks about consensus. And consensus, it means almost everyone must agree. And I can assure you, I must caution the department, because for me, instead, I don't want to reduce this submission into a colobin. But my main fear is if the department gets preoccupied with its own power and authority and not start to see, for an example, whether what is being raised, yes, it poses a challenge. It is an interpretation of the law. In the Maledu case, for an example, it was clear in that case that the department had not complied with IPILRA. That one was clear. And the danger will be that if the department then interprets because we must be able to say, yes, somewhere in other areas we have not complied with a certain piece of legislation. And if we have a problem with that piece of legislation, how then do we deal with that piece of legislation? I'm talking to advocates in the House, fortunately, so they can help us. Because my take is that we may not have a problem of consent, which is not an issue that I would say the department should be challenged. But as I'm sitting here, I say, if it was a board, I would say, can I get a liberal definition of consent? What does it mean? And I agree on the few issues that I will highlight to say what could be my interpretation of the risk and dangers of consent. I made an example. I said I'm from a very nice place that does not have a single robot called Paddy. But I grew up in KZN. Now, we still have to even define that issue. What happens when I say, this is where I'm coming from, that's where my graves of my ancestors up to my father recently are, but I need consent, but I don't stay there. But consent will require me. So I'm saying two possibilities, whether it's to appeal or is to seek an interpretation of the ruling, in particular for the department as it continues. So I know, I don't want you to go back to that declaratory order that put you in trouble. But I'm just looking at what is it that we give as an interpretation. The second thing that I think is important is that, let me go point by point, and I might agree with other aspects, but very quickly, I thought that report from, there's a report from Rural Development, on the dispute between traditional leadership, and I will come back to that, between traditional leadership and the CPAs. I think it's also similar to the case that you, not the case, but same community in the Northwest, where it said, the actual, I may not be giving a literal interpretation, but between the two, the actual representatives of the community is the CPAs. That will be my summary of it all, because there was a dispute between the two. Now, which indirectly will suggest if the CPAs agree, then you can grant a right. Is that what it means? But then the interpretation was saying, no, only on redistributed land. You see, not necessarily generally. But on traditional land, there is the APILRA also that kicks in, which must be compliant. So I think we have to strike this balance. I'm saying this thing because it's true what the DG says. I think we will... It's the same case if you go to Ecolobeni. We went to the Northern Cape. There's a place in North. You get some they call themselves a development trust. Others will call themselves a crisis committee. Others will then call themselves a development foundation. And all, they split themselves up to 10. And all of them, they claim to be representing the community. So it might help us then to understand what is it by interpretation that we mean, and does that mean that consent you get it by calling a community in a hall? What if I come back and say I did not receive the invitation? So consent, is it equal to agreement or is it equal to consensus? I think it's going to be important because I can see the high-level panel was doing its work. It was just making an over assessment. Quickly, I'm not sure. Usubongile says, I look at the question of a retrospective compensation. Then something kicks in here, somewhere down the line at the end. It says, what do we mean by retrospective compensation? Because I don't want us to take things for granted. My understanding is that if somebody has been granted the right, it actually means, because we must also draw two things. In my view, Honorable Schmidt, you get a right because you comply with the requirement. The question of engagement with community, with consultation with the community, is just one of a broader process of engagement between the person. So it's like, no, you meet all the requirements, but go and consult with the people. You do have a bank account, you do have this, you do have all those requirements that you put, your collateral, whatever you call it, for the rehabilitation and so forth. You meet those requirements. But another criteria is the one where you must engage with the community. Now, let's assume I feel that I did all these things. Then you say, no, down the line, no. There's something you didn't do, so retrospectively, you need to pay. That what could be the narrow interpretation. The second one could be, with the new requirements or legislations that are kicking in, you are supposed, if it was there at that time, you should have been able to do this. Now, my understanding of law is that it cannot apply retrospectively. Is that what we mean? So that I we don't go. Or should we sit here with the problem that we have always been having of your derelict and ownerless mines, where people, we can no longer find the companies, but Piginini has bought the mine, and behind Piginini there are about 16 or so other people who were in ownership. Then we say, you should have compensated us as this mining company, but it's no longer the company it was from the stage one. So can we get clarity on this retrospective compensation so that we don't create expectations? But quickly, I think I'll leave this for the question that relates to the DR account on the revenue generated, because I know Honorable Schmidt and Honorable Rook, they were here, they will say, we told you, this is what we have always argued. This is the same thing. That includes also the trust, because I think we have to deal. But can we get clarity on your submission? You talk about preferred rights. Now, I want to look at preferred rights. You say preferred rights for communities, junior miners and historically disadvantaged communities. Based on your SAMRAT system, how possible is that? The initial thing, when I don't want as a chairperson to say things that I don't know. When we were informed of the SAMRAT system, how it operates, is first come, first serve. So I put the right first, the community realized later after I've put the right, is there any provision in law to overturn my first application even when it is compliant, simply because now the community, I'm just saying in the system, we talk about the system, I understand how does that go, because I would imagine that has been our argument to say, but you should have a system that is transformative in nature. And with what you have in terms of the SAMRAT system, it's going to be impossible to be able to do what you are suggesting. So if I can get a balance, how do you do it? To say, no, you applied, you complied, but now this community has come in, or this historical, because my understanding was simple, was that if the first application kicks in, then your percentage share kicks in, which currently in your mining charter is 30% instead of the 26%. I thought that's what happened, but I thought I was getting something new. I must leave this issue of a suspension of a right. I had assumed that the suspension of a right also is only subject to non-compliance, and therefore penalties kick in. Is there something that says you grant me a right, and then when the community is no longer happy and satisfied, you withdraw the right, you revoke the right? Or is it what you have put that will make a determination? Because if you grant me and say these are the things that you have to comply with and you must do, it actually means it will be subject to that, not to the mood that today we woke up as a community, we're in a good mood, and we said, oh, go ahead. And then down the line, we realized that what we agreed on is not what we're supposed to agree on, and therefore we must change our minds now and ask something else. I want us to be clear on those things, you see. So if you can clarify me on that, then there's an issue of two communities. You see, when we're trying to do the amendments on the MPRDA, we dealt with the question of a definition of a community. Now it says each community. I can have a picture of a village, this Godi, this one and this one. Both of them, they will be affected by mining. This one gives concern, if you were to be literal. This one says, no, we don't. What then happens? What happens? Because in my view, I would say, maybe we are failing to deal with the mechanism on how to arrive on concluding this matter. So I think that to me is one of the things on these matters. The last thing, that's for a legal opinion. The problem here, mainly in the high-level panel, it talks to traditional land, mostly, or to communities in general. And I think the point that Honorable Smith was raising now raises an issue. There, so far, we have not seen disputes on land rights owners. But with all the laws that beyond the MPRDA you need to comply with, don't we foresee in future even the land rights owner requesting a similar treatment that you deal with when you are here? So I must broaden this thing, because my fear is that we may end up just focusing on whether there is consent and there is authority. I don't want to take away that, I know, DG, but I can also draw a simple line and say custodianship is not necessarily correct, and I think there is a point there. It may not be equivalent with consent. The only problem is not custodianship, it's authority, in my view. That it actually means with the authority that is in me, based on the fact that there's custodianship, but it's authority that comes first. Now that authority might get taken away just by virtue of requiring a consent. So you become a messenger, all what you do, they tell you can give this person, then you sign. But there's a flip side of it. What if you consent on someone who's not compliant? And people say, no, we said we want this mining company. And you say on the other side, no, we are not, we don't agree that this person must be granted on the basis of not meeting other requirements. What? So that we look at this thing of consent vis-a-vis the possibility of a negative side from the department, which could be declared as a positive thing from the community. So that consent can either even be problematic when the department says, you are non-compliant. When we look at your background, it's not giving us any hope that you will do justice. But the community says, no, but the authority to consent lies with us, and we have consented. So can you give this the go-ahead to do so? But I'm sorry to say this thing, but I was trying to move away from just dealing with power relations. But if you wanted to add something, Honorable Schmidt.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The issue concerning consent and consultation, in reality, in real terms, the mining company is an applicant, appoints a consultant. To call them, there are quite a few of those. They consult on behalf of the company. I can reasonably say there's an attempt to consult from within their sphere, and I don't think one can always criticize. There is reason for criticism, but in general, they try and consult. But there's no attempt to reach some form of agreement. They go through the process. You can look at the documents. They say they consulted with, here's the names, here's the comments. This is our reaction to the comments. But there's no underlying or perceived underlying attempt to get to a consensus point of view. So automatically, those who are consulted say, but I am being consulted, but I can tell you now, if DMR wants to grant this right, they are going to grant it. If the mining company wants to continue, they will get it. So what's the purpose of consultation? What is the purpose? Just being informed. So in my view, there should be a stronger obligation on mining companies to reach an agreement of some sort. Whether you call it broad consensus, whether you call it consent, whether you call it meaningful consultation, the point is, there should be a stage where those affected by it, in particular those directly affected by it, who are asked to leave their property, should, if not consent, short of consent, very much short of consent, so that there's an honest attempt to reach some form of broad consensus at least. Because I can imagine that in certain instances, like the chairperson's example, one community will say yes, another one will say no. But then, in my view, the Act should be amended to say there should be an attempt to reach consensus or consent, whatever you'd like to say. In the event which is not attained, DMR then refers the matter for arbitration and the parties are bound to the arbitration. And after that, if one of the parties are then unhappy, they can go to court like they do. But the onus is on the company to reach, call it broad consensus, call it consent, and failing which the DMR then acts as the arbitrator. And there is arbitration, but it's not followed. The section 104, Mr. Chair, is like a pie in the sky. I know of one court case where I think the community, the mining right that was issued, or granted at least to a mining company, was set aside by the court, and the section 104 was applied, and on the basis of preference right, even then the community then entered into a lease agreement with a mining company and their mining. But at least the mining right was granted to the affected mining community. And that one instance I know. There may be other, but I'm aware of one instance where section 104 as a preference right to the community was factually exercised. Now DJ will be able to say there's 3 or 4 or 5. But it is not an operative section of the MPRDA. Although it exists, it means very little to that community who is not even informed of that right. All they are met with is, we've got to go through a consultation process. Not reach any form of broad consensus. We just consult it. And then they go away. They're not saying, Section 104 gives you a preference, right? Because I'm afraid that if they were to do that, every mining community would say, I want to rely on my Section 104 preference right. And that will put a spanner in the works, because the mining DMR will then have to stop the process, and there will have to be, let's call it, a regrouping by the community to lodge an application, and the DMR will then lodge and ascertain the merits of those three applications, I would guess. But Section 104 is not applied. It doesn't apply. It's pie in the sky, with due respect. Then, last thing, on the state custodianship. It's similar to, it's not the same, but it's similar to guardianship or parental authority. I have guardianship, let's say I'm granted guardianship over someone else's child by virtue of a court order. I don't have unlimited rights as to that child. I can't tell that child what to do, what not to do. I have limited rights. It is stated by law. There are certain instances where I have no rights. For instance, and I can't think of a better idea, but where a girl child is pregnant, she may, without the say-so or without the authority of the parent or the guardian, go for an abortion process without informing the parent or the guardianship. What I am saying, I'm giving it as a similar, not the same, a similar example. The fact that state has custodianship doesn't mean it can do with it what it wants. It has to do so in a responsible manner to the benefit of all South Africans, everyone. So back to our example, there is no reason why the state, in saying I'm considering application by a mining company that you reach consensus or broad consensus or consent, failing which we will then be the arbiter and you're then unhappy, go to court. All you're doing is you're entitling, enabling, strengthening the rights of that community. You say, I want to reach consensus, I want to be a more equal partner in this negotiation process, which at this point in time, if you tell me they're an equal partner, I think you may be overstepping the mark. It's at least an unequal partnership, a relationship between the mining community and the mines and the DMR on the other side. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Quickly.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks for the report. You see, Chair, if you listen to the
thank you, Chair. Welcome the report.
You see, Chair, when you listen to high-level panel debate on the matter, It moves from the premise of this Pilbara, something like that, that they talk about, that act issue. It's more about consultation. Now, if that is the issue here, we just responded to those issues that they were raising, those recommendations. Man, I think as an activist now, I speak as an activist. Now, when an activist, you become involved in a process of public participation, maybe yourself as DMR, or that social facilitation. Now, in public participation, when you do it correctly, sometimes there are guidelines on it that guides all the processes. Even a social facilitator that will be employed by that company in that particular area where there's mining supposed to take place, where they can guide because they are aware for what is required and whatever consent is needed in that particular area. Now, it puts us in a place where we end up responding to that recommendation. You get the point? Instead, as an activist, you get to understand what people want in that particular vicinity because you engage them. You rather through stakeholders as a matter of the first consultation because before you go to the broader community. So it's a question of getting into a buy-in. Now, in whatever you are selling in that particular area, you are going to win. Because first and foremost, you engage them. They understand the PIRA, they understand MPRDA. The main example, when we look at that document, when we respond, we are starting to educate them. We didn't educate them during the process of that consultation that we're busy talking about, the issue of public participation process. It's not wrong only by not responding to it. You are not wrong. You respond to the recommendation. But I think this is where there was a missing link, in my view. I'm giving you this thing, I don't even need an answer on it. The reality of the matter, you must understand what people want. Now, in a public participation, when you miss that process, you are going to run a risk of answering and whatever responding without following a particular process. I'll make a very simple example. When municipality is doing ITP process, I think the teacher comes up with that process. A ITP process is more intense and activist approach in a way. Is done properly. That's the guideline that I really talk that you can work out, it moves that particular way. It can help us. No one will run away and say, we are not being consulted because they know we're having a month of January where we consider that particular matter and the particular time. There's a duration, there's time to end, start and finish. Now, if you fail to consider that particular time or you were not there, it's your own baby. Even if you are staying in Pity, you are not there in that particular time. You have to come down because the duration of time will come to an end. Now, I'm raising this matter because that public prostration process is a process that we need to come up with, and that process must be linked with timelines and all of that. That's my view on this particular matter. We will never have any kind of hassle in dealing with these particular matters. But I want to tell you, a social facilitator who has been taken away anywhere, those people that are dealing with social facilitation on mining, they are not involved in mining. It's a company, honestly, that will make money because they are a social facilitator, is good in speaking, is good in whatever, and they will have the mind of those particular companies. But if this process of guidance come to us as mining, as them are, it helps those guidelines to guide any facilitator where you're coming from. You might end up understanding what you are busy dealing with. Now, the easy challenge that I think that we need to deal with, first and foremost, is to make the point that MPFDA, when you are using it, that's what it's busy with, that is busy with. Us as government, as MR, we are in charge of all these particular mines on behalf of our people. It's very clear, MPFDA. Now we'll clarify it there in that particular guidelines, so that any Jack and Jill can respond on your behalf. There's no need of JEMA to be there at all times, because they educated them in the time of consultation process. That consultation process goes with public participation process, Jack. Now I wanted to talk to that, Jack. I don't need answers, but I think I need to guide the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me attend the presentation also. I think my view, Chairperson, there's no huge difference between the recommendations and the response from the DMR. The problem is only consultation, compliance, and implementation. What I have noticed is that mining companies will get to the land of the community mining. After that, they don't do the social labor. They don't give the social labor plans. That is where the problem lies, because in the mining that we have made oversight, in companies that we have made oversight upon, there were problems of SLPs. And you'll hear people complaining that they are mining in our land, but there's no jobs. There's no what. And I once asked the department that how do you let the mine, which is financially viable, to mine in a land and then don't comply with SLPs? And I think I was answered that if you didn't pay the SLPs for this duration, that SLP falls to another term or year. So I think that is the problem, compliance. If you can monitor those things and have something that will help us to make sure that compliance is there and implementation, I think we will go far. But I wanted to ask if there's a year somewhere in a high-level panel report, they are talking about helping community if they are having interest to mine in their own land. I just want to understand, if are they going to follow the same process as the company that comes from outside? Thank you.
Okay, Demar, you're on your own.
No, thanks, Chair. I think we should be able to respond to the questions as well.
Thank you, DG. I will start with the Honourable Chair. I think, the Chair, we welcome the comments on the fact that some of the issues like also the Honorable Maslow said, is on consultation, implementation and enforcement. The department is looking into enforcement issues. On there was a question by the chair on retrospective compensation. What does it mean? So, Chair, on compensation, you can divide it into two. Where a company committed to certain things, that and then failed to give effect to them, that's a non-compliant issue. So the department is in position to say, this is what you committed to, but you have failed to give effect to it. So we can put corrective measures to it. So that one is not a retrospective application. It's a non-compliance issue which must be addressed. On whether, on going back to say the community says we never received fair benefits which were not committed to, then that's a different issue. I don't think the department is in a position to say the community did not benefit fairly. I think it will have to be an issue of discussions with different stakeholders. I think the mining company and the community might have to engage further. Alternatively, it will have to be a court issue. I don't think the department can go back to say this community was supposed to benefit 1, 2, 3, but you only committed to one. It's a sensitive issue. I'm not sure if the department can do that, but on non-compliance, the department can put corrective measures on things that were committed but the company failed to do. On the preference rights for communities, I think Honorable Schmidt has said as responded to the preference rights for communities, but if you look at Section 9 is very clear that where rights applications were received on the same date, the minister can give preference, even if Anglo puts an application first, but the minister can give preference to an AGSA, irrespective of they are a community or not a community. On the same day, the minister can give preference. But on, I'm not sure if the act is clear on whether, if it's different days, the community's preference rights is still applicable, but I think Honorable Smith said the court ruled that it is still a preference right, so the community application must be processed. The suspension of the rights, Honorable Chair, is based on non-compliance. It's not based on afterthought to say that now we feel that we should have benefited 1 billion and we benefited 2 million. It's not based on that. It is on non-compliance with the terms and conditions of the right as the right when the right was granted, except for with the mining charter we have said that the provision is that so there is a transitional provision provided for existing right holders when they transition into renewing the existing rights, then there are additional requirements there, but because now you provide for a transitional provision, at least you can then say after 10 years maybe increase, if you had given the community 2% shareholding, now give them 5% only when they transition. So you're providing security of tenure for the operation that they are busy with at that stage. So where there are two communities, one consenting, so I will deal with consent as consent to benefit, not to whether mining must take place. So if there is an operation which will cut across two communities and the other community says we want these benefits and the other one says we don't want those, we want this, I think the best position here is to have local municipalities as they are the responsible organization for local economic development to and also assist with engaging communities, especially if there is a bigger operation that will have a bigger impact on both communities. But if there is still project that can be implemented individually. I suppose that also, if the committee prepares like that, I suppose it can also be done like that. In the mining charter, we've made provision for collaboration. So companies now going forward, they can be able to engage communities and different, if it's different local municipalities, and collaborate on a project that will have a bigger impact. I'm very cautious about getting into interpretation issues, because for me, consent and agreement, they get to one thing. It's one thing. If there is agreement or consensus, it means that nothing can happen until that has happened. We must agree that this is how it's going to be. So I also understand the Honorable Schmidt to say that consent on benefits, not on whether mining must take place or not. But I'm also not sure if that will work, Honorable Schmidt. I don't know. We welcome the comments on the guideline on public participation with the social facilitator. I think those points are great. And the assistance to HDFA's Honorable Mahfouz. So the Act Section 12 of the MTRDA says Minister must assist HDFA with the application. This can include Minister saying to IDC there's a community that wants to mine on their land. Can you assist with funding, or it can be assistance relating to environmental requirements, it can be assistance relating to any aspect of the law. I'm not sure if practically that works, but the Act provides for that provision for Minister to assist HDFA. And the Section 104, the preference right, it says that the community must have access to technical and financial resources, which is the assistance that Section 12 says the Minister must provide to HDFA. And it also says that the community that wants to mine on their land, they must submit a development plan indicating that the benefit will be for the community. So, and it's not the same process, but it's more or less, because they must submit technical and financial provision, but there's an additional for the development plan on the benefit, and that the right is not to 30 years like the normal mining.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mahina. I'll deal with maybe two questions from the chairperson. The customary law, chair, I think that's what IPILRA is considering or looking at, because it's an interim, you know, protection of informal rights. Now, what we are looking at here, especially from the side of the department, when you are saying land rights owners may also raise the same argument, I think there is a provision in law. We have what you call REMDEC that we are all familiar with. If the parties, you know, like the land rights owners, they have issues, they have a right to engage through REMDEC. Now, IPILRA was specifically created for those that their rights were not recognized by other pieces of legislation, their rights and interests. And now this in the main involves our homelands. I think I've clarified this, Chair. I don't know if maybe the answer is satisfactory, but there is actually an arrangement, of course. I mean, if people decide in the near future that, I mean, you know, they want to be considered like the way the courts have interpreted the issue of IPILRA, But we are saying that in terms of our law, which is MPSDA, there is a provision, and REMDEC is there to assist in adjudicating such a dispute. We have also raised a question around other pieces of legislation that we are required to comply with as a department. You will remember that a decision was taken some time ago for the establishment of one environmental system where DMR participates, DEA, Department of Environmental Affairs, and the Department of Water as well. And so it is working. I think towards the end of last year, we came here to make presentations to the honorable members. There were issues that we raised, of course. I mean, when we appear before you, when you raise issues, it is for us to go back and deal with those matters. But I think by and large, we are fine with what has been raised by honorable members. And some of the issues or points that you have raised, we have taken note of. But, Chair, on the issue of consent versus consensus, it will be an ongoing debate because the matter, as of now, it is with the courts. And now we are hopeful that out of that process, we will be able to settle this matter. I think in your comments, you have quite extensively elaborated on this point, but we'll hear from the court in terms of the interpretation between a meaningful consultation and also a consent. But of course, I mean, we know the challenges that are associated with consent without undermining the involvement and participation of our communities. I think other issues next time, hopefully, some of you will still be part of this committee. We can deal with those issues. Why is some of us be here? Thank you very much.
Okay. Bongi, you know what's your problem in MRC. And that's why we are sitting here. It's because of the traditional leaders who don't consult. Just now, a traditional leader did not consult, just went to the friend, then they switch on the friend. when there was consultation on switching off the friend. Now, if you want an example why you are in this situation, just look next door. It's a living example. So you will end up being green in your face on consultation and consent. Truth be told, had they consulted and reached consent with their community, probably wouldn't be here. Yeah. Chair, you can say anything.
No comment.
Honourable members, on a serious note, can we, DG, we are not punishing you and we've got no intentions to do so. Can we agree that this report is almost similar? Let me just say this again No. Agreement is generally assumed that there is majority consent on the matter. That's what it is. But consent on its own could generally be interpreted that there should be consensus and everyone must agree. You see, but it's not a question of undermining, because when you seek consent, the next question that may arise, are you seeking consent from people who are well informed on what they are supposed to be giving consent to? So you talk about a linear language, what is an affected community? Because in Gauteng, when people might be objecting of the implications on the mine, on the Vals River, it means the entire Gauteng is affected because they depend on the water in the Vals River. So it's another matter. Even the question of being affected, it might be a subjective matter on affected in what sense, affected by where the mine would be created, or affected on the implications of the mine on what the communities around the area stands to benefit. So we may agree on a mine here and only to find out these deposits are going to a river, which implications will be on a community that is far from where the mine is taking place. I'm just making an example that it may not be a very simple matter. But can we agree, honorable members, that we can only do, even if we wrap up to submit the report, we can only do this if we have had sight or we have engaged with the report by the Human Rights Commission, so that when we deal with it, at least we've got something that is a little bit harmonious. We will deal even with the issues. I'm sure those issues will arise, the SLPs vis-a-vis the ITPs and so forth. But sometimes the IDPs and the SLPs are not necessarily the same. I don't know whether some members were present when we went to, was it in Limpopo? There were other SLP projects. The problem with them is that they were not linked to the IDP. So you may find, like Honorable Smith was saying, it may not necessarily be a road, but you may find people who had vegetable gardens. But the problem with the municipality, they didn't have anyone who was collecting all the refuse to give them services. There was no market that was created for them, which means they were solely and permanently dependent on the mine. What our understanding is that the social and labor plan, it should be developmental in its nature, and therefore even to provide services and creating of a market, all those related things, they rely. So the IDP sometimes is, it should find extension on what the SLPs are doing. If you build a school, what's the point? Even if they build a school, it's okay, but if that school will not have access to the services that the municipalities have, it actually means everything beyond what is being provided becomes problematic. One thing that I think we cannot run away from, and I'm making this example, not that I'm singling one person. You said you don't want to say so. Part of the problems of non-compliance is glaringly in the report of the Falam Commission when it dealt with the question of Marikana. Quite clearly, non-mine had not complied. You see, it's a typical case of non-compliance. But the biggest problem that you have is that in the manner in which sometimes the mining charter agreement you had, it created problems, because we asked this question, at what point do you start to make an assessment of compliance? Because you, in most cases I could sense, we waited for the round tenure of the 10-year period and then started to make a quantification of compliance or non-compliance instead of having a staggered approach on how do we, so that it can be able to inform us on measurements whether this will happen. The last thing I think for me that is not contained here to some degree, I think it's the point one member, I'm not sure whether it's you, Honorable. I find it very strange, I must say, in most cases where you go, communities don't know, even the SLPs. I thought the SLP must be like your conditions of employment. You see, when you go in the workplace, you find the conditions of employment, you find this. The manner in which it is done, transparently and in an interactive way, it may address the point that is Mungilo we were talking about, whether consent on benefit or consent on any other. But I can tell you the interpretation that you have in other areas is consent on mining. That includes the right. But it's a matter that you said you will resolve in court. Do we agree, honorable members, that we will finalize, and hopefully it will still be a reminded matter when we deal with the report, which we are going to deal with it now in terms of the program, when the report on the Human Rights Commission, because it's there. Okay, having said so, honorable members, there is another matter, the matter of the D account. Mamia, You wanted to ask that question.
I thought the DG would present to have something to say around the matter, so I'll ask the question.
Okay, you can repeat DG. But I did explain.
The thing is that you called it the D account, and yes. Here it's interpreted wrong. So I wasn't really linking it to what I wanted to ask.
Oh,
I'm asking you to repeat the question again.
Thank you. We call it about the popular name, that's the issue. Okay, but you can re-explain it to
you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We have reported that there was a report, or there is a report that has been compiled by the public protector on the very same subject matter. And it is no longer within the jurisdiction of the GMR at this stage. We all know that it is now with the Treasury. And now what we have put before the committee in a form of an advice is that the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources should engage the Finance Committee for further information on the same matter. And so that the matter can be dealt with, quite speedily. And so at this stage, for the department, it's not within the purview of the department, it's outside the department. And so that's what we have reported in our members when we started. Thank you very much.
Come here.
Thank you, Chair. I think you just have to be very patient with me.
Don't worry.
Because I come from Nelson Mandela Bay as an impact chair passenger. So I wasn't dealing with mines, I wasn't dealing with any of those kind of issues. So I'm still trying to learn as I go. So if it's stated this way, that's how I understand it and that's how I'm thinking about it. I wanted to ask the DG, in terms of specifically this case, isn't the DMR then obliged to, because there's a party, it says the department considers the requirements as contained in the Mineral and Petroleum, the MPRDA, when assessing compliance, not individuals, or the history. So my question is, do you continue then to maintain that the DMR should not continue maybe considering criminal charges or convictions when deciding whether or not to grant mineral rights to specific people or specific entities, say in the case of the Khosi Manyala Kalani, for instance, would you then not pursue criminal charges in that case?
Through you, Chair. You know, we are dealing with the issue of royalties, which is not the purview of the department, it is with the National Treasury. And if there is anything that has got anything to do with finances, and that matter should be referred to the National Treasury. Now, where we are required as a department to act, I think it is within our right to do so. You remember that this is a recent judgment that has been issued. And so the issue in the main is that there must be further consultation with the affected communities. And so as for the court case and also the criminal charges, we are not in a position of commenting on that point at this stage, because we believe that the court judgment is very clear in terms of how this process should be undertaken moving forward. And also, then also on the, I think the report, when you interact with the finance committee, you'll be able to have more information inside in terms of what it is contained, then it will then help you to be able to make a judgment and also a decision as the leadership on how to move forward in the matter. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a matter of interest, royalties goes to National Treasury by the mining company, paid by the mining company. As I understood it, the money goes into a big black hole, the National Treasury Fund. What is the difference between the money in the Z account and this called the money in the big black hole? What, why did the money, was it a part of the conditions of the mining right that certain money be paid to the Z account versus royalties, as we know, royalties in its pure sense? Or was this royalties paid by National Treasury into the D account? Just trying to work out that.
It was paid directly by the mining company into the D account, which, I mean, is the account that is under the provincial administration. So, as I've said, that honorable members, when they go through the report from the finance department, I mean, finance committee, they will be able to have more insight to this report. But of course, we know that this was administered by the provincial government.
Okay, you know, DG, I think for me, no, don't worry, Mamiyako. Just to make it easy, yes, cause I'm trying to say Livingstone Hospital. So collect, relax. I grew up in Russia as a young person. So collect. If you know Livingston Hospital, if you want my in the archives there, you go. I'll give you the year and everything. So don't ask. So that you come from an area where anything can change tomorrow and today. So like the weather is exactly like that. But on a serious note, DG, I think the point here, maybe let's just explain. It has been a big, just to take you through, honorably. The biggest problem in the mining industry is that it has been absolutely less regulated. Let's just start there. Second is that we raised this issue, if members were to go back, and that's why I said we share your statement. We went to KZN, is it RBM, ne? We found in RBM, in fact commonly in many of those areas, that it was not even double dipping, it was triple dipping, because there were trusts established by the community. The problem with those trusts, they have got nothing to do with the mining company, they have got nothing to do with the department or government, master said. The ones that he's talking about would be those that were supposed to go to government. Now, the worst thing then there was that there was an issue which is all know, contentious one of the Ngonyama Trust. Now, this money goes, we're told, goes to the Ngonyama Trust. But the community still, they want the mining companies to do something within their localities. Now the question was, what then becomes the basis of this money? But some of them, it was done, they will establish a trust account. And that trust account will be under traditional leadership. Now the fights or the things that were happening were more like mining, when in actual sense they were not mining. Yes, they would have been mining because there were lives lost in the hierarchy. So if this one is supposed to be Inkosi, there were suspicions that that person, when he's assassinated, is simply because that chieftaincy must go to somebody else, who then will get an opportunity to preside over this. So when the conflicts are taking place, it's more like traditional things, but in essence it's about the past. Amongst other things that were recommended, which is why I thought the DG were to say as a mechanism, was that shouldn't the department consider, including the mining company, to say if there are established community trusts or whatever to handle those monies on behalf of the community, at least there must be representatives of the company and representatives from the department or from the state. Even if it's not, whether, so that there can be accountability on how those monies were utilized. The problem now is that even if you call this department, they don't know what is happening in those trust accounts, simply because the manner in which trusts are established, they don't necessarily have to be to put a requirement. So what we said is that there should be a consideration as they go with the mining charter, a consideration whether there shouldn't be a prescription on how these monies are going to. For an example, there is a proposal I know, there is something in the MPRDA that says a percentage must go to communities. So this the account is more or less the same thing with your derelict and ownerless mines. There was no regulation, there was no way of managing those things. And therefore it's more like a water under the bridge. But in terms of pressing criminal charges, any person can do it. I don't think even you can wait for, if I feel that I suspect a foul or something, somebody must account. I don't think it requires the department, I don't think it requires even individuals can take up. I'm not saying, that's my assumption, that I don't think we should wait, or I should wait if I feel that there's a case to answer here in a criminal procedure. But I think what the DG is correct on is that before you could do that thing, you need to understand the report. What I don't know, DG, is even if we do that with the Committee on Finance, how long? My advice would be that maybe we should start to familiarize ourselves with the public protector's findings, even before we consider. Then maybe next week, when the minute arises, let's agree on what course to follow and what do we want to achieve with that. Because in my view, as long as, which I thought the teacher was going to say, to help us and say, what are the projected mechanisms to avoid similar things in future to happen, like what happened but I can assure you it's not that one was too much. It is not the only thing that is happening. Again, I think when we went to, was it Kumba, whatever, in the Northern Cape, same issue was raised about the monies that were kept, I think, by a trust fund or trust or something like that. So I think the development trust, the development whatever, that issue. But in my view, we must find a way. I don't think now we should take a hasty decision. I can assure you, if you go to the Committee on Finance now, they will tell you how much they are so busy, and I don't think they'll be pretending. I can try just to check with the chairperson on finance whether that is possible, and how far are they with the matter. But I know finance, they meet even at night. So I will then be able to present. But my advice is that let's just go and familiarize ourselves with this thing and look at how do we make it a point that there is protection in the future going forward.
Thank you. It's just to say that the mining charter now meets the requirement for mining companies to speak as trustees in the community.
Why not you?
Chair, remember, trustees have legal fiduciary duties. So I'm not sure if the PSA regulations or treasury regulations allow for officials of government to be trustees in community.
Leave it with us. We will go and ask the finance. They have to do something. That it can't be. If we must find a way, let's do it. Because we are not gonna. The problem is that we are not going to make the trustees to account when we don't have anyone. So when we ask, we'll be asking you. You see? And you will give us this answer again. I'm just saying, let's look at it. I agree with the mining companies. Maybe there can be some element of accountability on their side. But that person can even resign and there may be no follow-ups that are necessary. Okay, being the case as it may, honorable member. Okay. Wait. There is a program in front of us. social part. Yeah. There is a program in front of us. Starting now from the 20th of February up to the 20th of March, I dare say what you don't see written there, it's what I would say subject to change. It's written on a white ink. Do we agree, honorable members? Mamia, Mayor Matala? I thought you today, since honorable, I was sat next to you, you are so disciplined. One more phone?
Yes, honorable.
Okay. Having said so, there is a letter. Where is this letter, boss? Okay, I want to summarize. Do you allow me, honorable members, to summarize it? No, yes. There is a letter received from the speaker. On 20 November in the main complaining about a certain Mr. Jindal and his mining activities in KZN. But it makes reference to, in the main, his external activities. If I can put it simple, he is alleged to be involved in coal irregularities in India, where he comes from. He is a member of parliament in India, lives in India, not in South Africa, and is an Indian businessman. The area they say is operating from is around Melmoth. Yes. So the problem is that it is not necessarily, it seems when we read the letter, it's not necessarily about his activities in South Africa. It's his activities in India. And he's not a member of parliament in South Africa. He's a member of parliament in India. So when I was sitting on a representative as a joke, I said, this might require a member of the Pan-Africanist parliament, because it requires continent to continent. But I'm not trying to force members to do. My suggestion was that we take this letter, we forward it to the department. The department must give us a response, and subject to the response of the department, we can then deal in overall both with the letter, the response of the department, and then be able to give the speaker the outcome. But I think for fairness to all members, we might have to forward all of you. Sorry, it was no. We might have to forward all of you the letter so that you can study, so that when that response comes back, we both deal with the content of the letter as to whether it is correct the manner that we did. We also deal with the response of the department on the letter, and then be able to take the letter forward. I don't think it will take you too long, DG. When we send you the letter now, as we are sitting here, surely when you come back next week, as we deal with matters arising, you would have given us a response on the letter, and members would have had the copy of the letter to themselves. Do we agree, honorable members? It's an internationalist who's responding. Can you get another one? Yes, internationally.
Oh.
Yes. Oh. You represent Africa, not us. Any second, Honorable Schmidt?
From internationals representing South Africa.
Okay, honorable members, I'm sure we can run through. I don't like to delay people in meetings, but at the same time, I don't like to fudge things for the sake of it. Where are my minutes now? Huh? No, 21. Okay, honorable members, we deal with the minutes of the 21st November 2018. Then we're going to check if I say 2019. What are you to say? Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. any mover?
Rama, thank you, Honorable Chair. I'd like to move for the adoption of the minutes of the 21st November 2018 as a true reflection of the meeting we held. Thank you.
Any second? Rama, first.
I second
chair
for the adoption.
Any matters arising? In the absence of any matters arising, you are duly released until further notice. The issue of the island panel recommendation was there. One, two, is the issue of the...
Because I thought it's not specific in the sense that you said...
Can you not put in the telepic?